That's Rodney Page at the Steinway here in Studio S at WKAR. Rodney is a Southfield native and our Live Music Friday guest here today. He's going to be doing a lot of moving around the studio because Rodney plays the violin. He's obviously a really talented piano player, but he sings, DJs, and raps as well. And he's a music educator as well. So he manages to cover an awful lot of bases. And we'll be covering a lot of those here today on Live Music Friday. We're excited to have Rodney Page with us, MSU grad to boot. Rodney Page coming up here on a Live Music Friday. I'm Mark Bayshore. Welcome back to Current State. To begin our program today, Flint Mayor Karen Weaver reviewed the challenges and the opportunities for her city in her first State of the City address last night. Filtered water was declared safe for all to drink about a month ago. But the mayor acknowledged last night that the city will continue to pay a price until Flint truly recovers. That's a quote. Right now, the city's trying to navigate an uncertain and very costly replacement of lead service lines, and a federal emergency declaration is set to expire in 9 days, which has triggered some worries among residents. But the mayor also shared good news yesterday. A manufacturer, C3 Ventures, is investing close to $10 million in Flint. That's expected to create around 400 new jobs. To learn more, we welcome Mayor Karen Weaver back to Current State. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
The Detroit News reports that you struck a tone of hope yesterday. Were you aiming for that tone?
Well, certainly, because there should be hope. And that's one of the things that I've always believed in as far as the city of Flint and the people, is that things can be better and things will be better. There's a lot to be hopeful for. Even though we do have a lot of issues and a lot of challenges, there are good things that are going on in the city and that will be going on in the city. And that's one of the things that, in light of this water crisis, that we haven't had an opportunity to shine the spotlight on. What are some of the good things that are happening or that are coming to Flint? So we needed to do that.
What kind of response are you getting to your address? What are you hearing?
Well, actually, just what you said, that it gave people hope. There was optimism. And, because we focused so much, which we have to focus on this water crisis until we get it resolved. But like I said, it's overshadowed some of the other things that have been going on in Flint and some of the great things that we have that were already in place and those that are still yet to come. And that was why I was glad to be able to do that yesterday.
How would you describe the mood of Flint residents right now?
Well, one thing is people are still, we're hopeful, but we're frustrated. We're tired. We should not be in year three and not being able to turn on the faucet and just drink the water like every other place in the United States. And even though filtered water was declared safe for everybody, people have reservations about the filtered water, and that's where the issue lies. And that's why we know the bottom line is we've got to get new infrastructure and we've got to get new pipes. Some of the issues that happen with filters, we know it's a Band-Aid. Band-Aids can work, but you have to replace them. You have to put them on right, and we have a lot of people where that's a challenge for, and some people still have the kinds of sinks and faucets where the filter does not work, and they have to use the pitcher, and that's a big inconvenience. And so, going into year three, we're still on bottled and filtered water, except for those homes where new pipes have been put in.
Let's spend another minute or so here on this lead service line replacement challenge that you have. I take it some 30 lines have been replaced, but there are literally thousands more. And it's a slow, and it's turning out to be, I guess, a much more expensive process than anyone anticipated. Right now, Mayor Weaver, do you have an idea where the funding for lead line replacement is likely to come from?
Well, we have some money set aside, but that's not enough. That's only half of what we've requested just for those homes that we've identified as high priority. And one of the things you brought up was it costing more. Well, it was interesting because initially, just for the Fast Start program, we had anticipated about $55 or $56 million, and that was for about, 15,000. And you go in and you find out not only do we have lead service lines, but you also have galvanized pipes, which is worse, we found out, than the service lines, and that's where the extra cost came in. It's like, whoa, we've got these galvanized lines as well. So that's what it is. So we've got, what, $27 million to start. And part of the thing that slows down the process, I would say, is, you know, we still have that receiver transition advisory board in place. And so while things go through administration, then it goes through city council, we still have to wait another month for things to go to the receiver transition advisory board. And they should be meeting next week. And we hope that the three companies that are lined up to get started, the process can get started immediately after they meet next week.
How much money do you need to replace all the lines that need replacing?
Well, we're going to say that the entire city needs replacing because of the trust factor. What do I mean by the trust factor?
No, what do you mean by the entire city needing to be replaced?
The entire city of Flint, we're looking for completely new infrastructure. One thing we know is nobody has been able to tell us when these, when our lines will be good to use again. You know, when this first started and we were trying to recoat the pipes, we were told it would take, 30 to 60 days. Well, here we are months later, half a year later, because this was December when we thought this would take place, and it has not. And we have not been able to get an answer. The only answer we've gotten is, as we continue to test and monitor the water, that yes, the quality is getting better, but we still can't use it, and we don't have that definite answer. So, and then I'm saying the trust factor, because if I went out and said, you know what, and all the science has showed us that the pipes are safe to use, they've been properly recoated, there are a lot of people that don't trust that, because we were not given information in the beginning of this, even though people cried out about it. And so that's why we know the only solution to rebuilding that confidence and trust is new infrastructure for the entire city, which could cost, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm. We are talking with Flint Mayor Karen Weaver here on WKAR's Current. State Mayor Weaver delivered her first State of the City address late yesterday. Back on Wednesday, you sought to reassure Flint residents who are worried what will happen to bottled water and filters after the federal emergency declaration expires, which happens in 9 days. You said that the state will take up any slack with bottled water and filters at that time. Do you think Flint residents are less anxious about that, about the end of the emergency declaration after what you said on Wednesday?
Well, I'm hoping that let people know, because actually, because that was a concern, is what happens next. Does the bottled water stop? Do the filters stop? And we wanted to let people know that undoubtedly that does not stop. And so then one of the other things I was doing was really going to the water distribution centers to see what kind of questions and issues were coming up. And they were the same ones. They said they thought that people are really asking for extra water because they thought it would stop. And so that was one of the things they were glad to hear, was it will not stop. And one of the things I was able to let people know yesterday also was, until we get this water issue resolved, however long that takes, the credits will not stop either. So they need to know that.
And you personally, Mayor Weaver, are reassured that they're not going to stop? You feel confident that there won't be?
I feel confident that it won't stop.
Okay.
Does it mean we don't want donations for bottled water? No, it doesn't mean that, because we're still in a situation. That's what people have asked. Should we still send water? And we're saying, yes, please continue to do that. We don't want people to forget that we're still in this crisis and we can't turn on our water. And so we want water from the state. We want it from the federal government. We want it from volunteers and any place we can get it.
In a couple of weeks, various officials are going to be reviewing water data. What kind of data will you be looking at here, and what do you hope to learn?
Well, one of the things we've been continuously looking at is, we're treating the water, but when we test it, how do the lead level results come out? How does that copper level come out? Because those have been the issue as far as they're previously not having been corrosion control. But more importantly, we're looking to see that we get whatever the information is, that we get it from more than one source. Because, I know I keep going back to trust, but that's that plays such an important factor here. So when we get the results, we want to get them from MDEQ. We want to get them from our water testing. We want to get them from EPA. We want to get them from the outside independent person that we've contracted, you know, that we're working with. So we need to get the same results from a variety of places before people, you know, can start trusting again.
Right.
So if one source says it's okay, that's not enough for us anymore.
My understanding is that the data here in a couple of weeks, this water data that you'll be looking at, will also give you an idea about how a couple of initiatives might be working. One is a citywide flushing program.
Yes.
And another is a program involving additives to city water. Am I right? You'll find out.
You're right about that.
Okay.
And, you know, one of the things, we did the flushing program. We started that, and after we did that for that month long, we did see, you know, our test results came out in a more positive direction. And so we're looking to see that again, and maybe it's something we need to do citywide again and continue to push that. You know, right now people may be doing sporadically, but that flushing really, really helped the system because, you know, our system is larger than the population now. It used to be, you know, Flint was double the size. And so we had a water system that was double the size of the population now. And so we've got to keep that water flowing for it to remove things and to be good and to recoat those pipes. So you're exactly right. It's those things we're looking for.
Mayor Karen Weaver of Flint is our special guest here on WKAR's Current State. It's been a month or so here since all Flint residents, including pregnant women, kids, everybody, were given the go-ahead to drink filtered water. Some number of residents, I take it, you've alluded to this already, some number of residents are not doing that because their trust has been broken. What are you saying to residents who are still not willing to drink filtered water?
Drink bottled water.
So you're accepting...
I mean, you have to do what you're comfortable with. If I don't trust the filter, I'm not going to use it. So you have to do what you're comfortable with, and that's the message I want people to know. And that's why bottled water has to continue as well, because there are some people that aren't going to trust that. They're not going to believe it. And like I said, we have issues as far as the frequency with which the filter needs to be turned changed. People that don't know how to put it on. We're trying to go door to door to make sure people have that education and know you've got to replace it at this point in time. Let me come and put it on for you so it's installed properly. And for some people, they don't want to be bothered with that. They don't trust it. And so that's why. And so you have to do what makes you feel safe and makes you feel comfortable. And that's why we need bottled water as well.
Governor Snyder and even President Obama were seen drinking filtered Flint water, I take it. And the governor made a big deal about drinking it for a month. Are you drinking filtered Flint water or are you drinking bottled water?
I drink bottled water. I'm in one of those homes where, you know, I was talking about the homes where the filters don't fit on the faucet structures that we have. I live in one of those homes. So I'm a person that's using bottled water. And that's why, and that was the other thing I was talking about.
At some point, Mayor Weaver, would you hope to be able to start drinking filtered water just as a message of reassurance to Flint residents that it is indeed safe to drink?
Sure, yeah, that's what we hope. But the other thing is, and here's where we're happy that that's what everybody has said about filtered water. But on the other hand, and that's progress, so I don't want to take away from that. But on the other hand, we wish we had known to filter the water when that switch was made. That's what we wish. For many, many people in America, the decision to drink filtered water is a choice. It's a choice that they have because they can turn on their faucet. And so that's where some of our anger and frustration lies. Yes, we're glad that we're at that step because previously you couldn't make that statement. But we're still saying, do you all have to drink filtered water?
We're running out of time, and I know
okay.
you've got things to do, but I promised we'd talk about some of the good news. I was hoping to ask you about all of the criminal and civil charges here, but we're going to have to wait for another time to ask you about that. Let's talk. I'm sorry?
I said I'll come back.
That's great news. You're welcome here anytime. Some good news you spoke of last night. Tell us about the manufacturer here, C3 Ventures, that's investing in Flint and creating jobs. What are they going to be doing?
Yeah, we are really excited because, like you said, it's almost $10 million, and it should bring about 400 really good-paying manufacturing jobs to Flint. And they're going to be making some components, really their interior plastic components for the auto industry. And the other good thing about that is not only do they want to focus on making sure Flint residents get as many of those jobs as possible, they want to give incentives to people. I don't know what the incentives will be. Bob Schaefer will let us know more about that. But they want to give incentives to people from outside the city if they will move here. So that's exciting news, and we need those kinds of jobs to come back. So that's a great start for us.
Flint Mayor Karen Weaver, our special guest here today on Current State, the day after her first State of the City address last night. You're welcome here anytime, Mayor Weaver. Good luck.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
His Grace is Glory is the name of that. Rodney Page, our special guest here today, our special guest performer here at our 1936 Steinway. Is that an original composition, Rodney?
Yes, it is.
Very good. Very nice. Well, more from Rodney. He'll be playing on the violin, and he sings, and he raps, and he DJs, and he's a music educator as well. More from Rodney coming up on Live Music Friday. Time now for a pop-up story here on Current State. Once a month, we host a live public storytelling event at any number of locations around Lansing. This one's from our last event at Allen Marketplace, where the theme was Putting Down Roots. Storyteller Missy Lilje describes how her roots called her home.
So somebody who I wish I was good friends with, Oprah, she used to say on her show that you are not your job, you are not what you do. And that is something that I think my parents would have agreed with. They both were teachers, and my dad's family goes back a couple of generations here in this area. And he tried really hard to move us to the suburbs. Well, he did move us to the suburbs when we were born. They moved us out to Hazlitt. And I got the sense that success would be defined by going out into the world, into a new place, and setting down your roots and making your life there. And I, through my life, have started to think of roots in two different ways. One way is kind of that scary movie, gnarly monster that you can't escape from. And the other way is something more stable and secure and comforting. And the second one is, it can be beautiful because it can also sustain growth. And I'm going to start kind of at the end and jump around a little bit. I was asked to present at the National Dance Education Organization about the work that I do here in Lansing, which I think is funny because I always thought, if I'm a dancer. I grew up praying, dear God, please let me figure out how to be a dancer. Please let me be a dancer. I don't care what it takes. And then I would wake up in the morning and go, I think I'm going to be a teacher. I think I'm going to be a psychologist. I think I'm going to be anything but a dancer, because you can't make a living that way, I was told. So I decided I'm going to be a dancer, and I thought that meant that I had to leave Lansing. And so I tried. I was a professional dancer. I toured all over the place. I, you know, went to grad school in Phoenix, Arizona, spent time in New York, on the West Coast. I mean, and every day that I was away, I could just feel, whether they're gnarly roots or comforting, you know, comforting sustainability, I felt that pull, and I would have a fight with myself about which is it. Is this a positive thing or a negative thing? Well, eventually, when I turned 30, I just decided to stop fighting the pull. And I had this great job in Arizona, and just out of nowhere, I decided to quit and just come back. I didn't have a job waiting for me here. All I had was the lack of willingness to fight the pull of the roots. And so I just plopped myself down here, and things just, doors started opening up, and it felt like the roots were talking to me and saying, see, we told you so. We told you that if you would come back, you could feel some comfort here and that you could be a dancer here. And so I work for this wonderful organization called Happen Dance, and have been able to work full-time as a dancer and a choreographer and a teacher, and now as a community member, in a way that I feel makes a difference and makes, I hope, the community better. And a little over a year ago, Joan Nelson called me and said, well, I know you've been located in Okemos for the last 20 years, but have you ever considered opening a satellite location in Lansing? And of course I had. Of course I had. I'd looked at properties over the last 15 years, even before I had the authority to make such a decision on behalf of Happen Dance. I was always going, oh, look at that vacant space. We could put a Happen Dance satellite location in there. So when Joan said, have you ever thought about this? I said, of course I had. And she said, well, how fast could you get your board to make a decision to move into this storefront next to the neighborhood center? And I have this wonderful board of directors, and they said, okay. And again, you know, the roots were like, I told you so, here's a grant, here's support, so we haven't even quite been here 1 year, but it feels like we've been here forever. And to disagree with my good, I wish she was my friend, Oprah, I do feel like who I am is my job. I do feel that what I do is who I am. It's an expression of who I am. And the roots that surround me are constantly agreeing with me and saying, we told you so. Happy to be here in Lansing.
And we hope to see you next Wednesday for more first-person true live storytelling at Valley Court Park. This is next Wednesday, 7 p.m., Valley Court Park in East Lansing. Our next pop-up stories, it's The Call of the Wild, stories of wildlife, the outdoors, and nature. We get started at 7 p.m. There's an interesting anniversary that is approaching on Monday that I wanted to just mention because this is such an interesting chapter in Lansing's history. On Monday, August 8th, it's the 50th anniversary of 3 days of rioting in the city of Lansing. I was in the Lansing area 50 years ago, and I'd managed to forget about this. I haven't thought about this in forever. The Lansing State Journal headline, August 8th, 1966, the headline, Police Curb Rioting Youths, Downtown in Uproar, 5 hours. The article goes on to say that rioting youths, apparently aroused by racial friction in the downtown area, roamed the city in gangs late Sunday night, defying police for almost 5 hours before order was restored. Another headline, 4 shot in violent night. Part of our city's history that you may have forgotten about. I had lost track of this, and the anniversary of those unfortunate days is coming up. It's Monday, August 8th, 50 years since 3 days of rioting in the city of Lansing. I'm Mark Bayshore. This is Current State here on WKAR. Have you heard? The opening ceremony for the Summer Olympics in Rio is tonight. There you go. You heard it here first. For 16 days, the greatest athletes in the world will compete on a global stage. One of those athletes is former MSU rower Emily Reagan. Current sports host Al Martin recently spoke with Reagan about her sport, her Olympic dreams, and her time at MSU.
You are a native of Buffalo, New York. How did you get into the sport, and were you competitive in other sports as well?
Yeah, I played a ton of sports in high school and growing up. I was a swimmer. I played basketball. I'm from a really big basketball family. All three of my siblings played basketball in college. But I kind of was burnt out with sports and didn't really want to continue doing sports. And that was sort of a big draw of Michigan State for me, was to be able to be part of the Big Ten atmosphere and go to football games and just enjoy the college atmosphere but not be a part of a team. And I went to my orientation program in the summer leading up to my freshman year. And at the very end, there's the activities fair. And I went through it, and my mom went through it separately. And my mom started talking to the people at the rowing booth. And I don't remember there being one, but the rest of the summer, my mom bugged me and just was like, you need to row. And I actually was pretty stubborn and didn't want to row. But when I moved in, I was roomed blind with a girl, and she's 5'1", and I'm 6'2". Mm-hmm. And our moms, and in rowing, there's a coxswain who's short, and rowers are tall. But our moms ended up ganging up on us, and we ended up trying out together.
So you're telling me, Emily, that rowing wasn't even your thing. You are really a late bloomer when it comes to getting into the sport of rowing.
With rowing, I think it's kind of average now because of Title IX to start in college.
Right.
It's really opened a lot of doors for women in rowing. But I guess in terms of other sports, yeah, definitely.
Certainly. Now, Emily, when you talk about the sport itself, what is it about the sport that you love?
Oh, gosh. A lot. It can be really challenging because you train a lot and you don't get to race as often as you might compete in other sports. But there's something really special about being on the water. It's always beautiful settings where we get to row. There's just something gorgeous to look at all the time. And in rowing, there's something really special when you get the boat, like, moving at its best. And it doesn't always happen, and it's always a challenge to try and figure out how to make it go faster and faster. But when you get it moving right, it feels really awesome.
U.S. Rowing is based in Princeton, right?
Yes.
How did you get involved with that?
Well, the spring of my sophomore year, my college coach, Matt Weiss, and the University of Virginia college coach encouraged me to try out for what's known as the under 23 national team. So that's sort of a step below the senior national team. Mm-hmm. And it's for people who are under 23 years old. I got destroyed that summer when I went to that camp, and I wasn't prepared for what it was going to be.
Yeah.
But it kind of gave me motivation to sort of want to see how far I could go in rowing. And the fall of my senior year, I went to a national team identification camp, and our head coach, Tom, invited me from there to come out to Princeton after I graduated.
What did it take for you to qualify for the Rio Games, Emily?
Oh, a lot of hard work. So rowing is, it's a kind of a combination of a trials process and a camp process that you would get for a team like a basketball team or a soccer team. Mm-hmm. And so we spent the last year specifically, but 4 years training as a team. And our coach gathers information throughout the years on how we're performing to sort of rank us. And then the last week before the team gets named, we do a ton of selection and we race athletes against each other over and over and over again. And it's exhausting and it's stressful. And but it ends up, it's a difficult thing to go through, but in the end, it has worked really well for our team. And we've produced a lot of really fast boats over the last few years.
Emily, how long have you had your eyes on the Olympics?
For definitely at least 5.5 years since I've been training with the national team. And 2012 is a little soon for me. It's a sport where the more you do it, the better you get, the more time you spend, the faster you're going to be. And it was kind of eye-opening for me when I didn't make the team in 2012 because I just didn't have self-confidence then. And I've learned a lot since then, and now I've been able to just kind of gain on things I've learned and help me make the team this time around.
We are chatting with Emily Reagan, former Michigan State rower, who will compete in the Rio Olympics next month. Now, Emily, you were a part of a U.S. women's eight that set a world record time at World Rowing Cup 3 in Switzerland. And that record still stands. Emily, how does it feel to have your name in the record books? That's got to be pretty surreal.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the boat that we raced at the World Cup that year was, you know, after the Olympics, a lot of people retire. And that boat was full of a lot of rookies. Some girls had never raced internationally before, and others were racing in their first Olympic class event. And so we just kind of went to Lucerne with no expectations at all. And we totally surprised ourselves, and it was a really fun time.
Man, that's got to be unbelievably cool. Now, Emily, for people who are listening out there and also myself who aren't really knowledgeable about the sport of rowing, can you tell us a bit about the event you'll be competing in out in Rio?
So I'm competing in the women's eight, which is actually 9 athletes. There are 8 rowers and a coxswain. The coxswain steers the boat and calls a race plan and makes sure that we know where we're going, because in rowing, we actually face away from the finish line. Mm-hmm. so we don't ever really know exactly where we are, and that's what the coxswain does.
Okay, gotcha.
And so our races take place over 2,000 meters, and you basically just, it takes about 6 minutes, somewhere between about 5:50 and 6:05, depending on wind conditions on that day. And you basically just go as hard as you can for those 6 minutes. It's like probably racing the mile or a little longer than a mile in track.
4 years ago, you went with your teammates to watch the London Olympics. How did it feel to be that close to the action, but yet not compete?
Motivational, for sure. It was really awesome to watch my teammates because they were really successful in London. The women's eight won a gold medal, our women's quad won a bronze medal, and our women's pair finished just a tenth of a second out of the medals. And so it was really exciting to watch them race, but at the same time, it was kind of, I can be here in 4 years. I know what they did, and now I can take from what I've learned from them and hopefully add it to my journey.
Now, a number of athletes have decided not to compete in Rio because of the Zika virus in that country. Are you concerned about that? And did you consider maybe not going?
Did I consider not going? Not at all. Not one second did I consider not going. I think if you look at the athletes who have backed out because of Zika, you're going to find the majority of them are from sports where they have something that's better for them than the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So in basketball, you've got the NBA championships. In golf, you have your PGA Tour. But for us as rowers, the Olympics are the absolute height of a career that you can have. And so I never, ever once thought about backing out because of that, because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I'm so fortunate to have this spot on the team.
Can you tell us about the schedule for Rio? I know trials, again, begin on August 6th, and finals for the men's and women's eights are on Saturday, August 13th. Is that accurate?
Yeah, so our final is at 11 a.m. Rio time on August 13th, so that's 10 a.m. on the East Coast. And then our racing actually starts on August 8th. Rowing starts on the 6th. So our first race will be August 8th. And if we win our heat, we advance directly to the final. And if not, we'll compete in what's called the repechage, which is a last chance to make the final on August 10th.
Well, I tell you what, we'll be watching. We will be rooting for you. Again, folks, we've been talking with former Michigan State rower Emily Reagan, a member of the USA Women's 8 rowing team heading to Rio for the Summer Olympics. The finals are on Saturday, August 13th. And that morning, you can join fans for a viewing event in the north end zone of Spartan Stadium starting at 8 a.m. Emily, on behalf of all of us here at WKAR, we are wishing you good luck.
Thank you so much.
Former MSU rower Emily Reagan there talking with current sports host Al Martin about competing in the Rio Olympics. Again, the opening ceremony is tonight. Rodney Page is our Live Music Friday guest performer here today on Current State. Rodney performed just last week. If you took in the Jazz on the Grand concert at the Lansing City Market last week, you saw this very versatile musician in action. He's a violinist, a piano player. He DJs and raps and sings. Right now we're going to hear Rodney perform on violin with a little bit of accompaniment, a technological accompaniment here. This is Satin Doll. Rodney Page on Current State. Thank you. Satin Doll. It's Rodney Page here on Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Rodney is a Southfield native, an MSU grad, and besides violin, we've also heard him perform on our Steinway piano here today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You are a versatile guy. How did the musical part of your life start out? What was your introduction to music?
Well, I wish I had a great story to tell you, but actually, I started playing violin when I was in fifth grade. I was 10 years old, and I wasn't involved in any extracurricular activities in school. And so my mother actually said, you must join an extracurricular activity. And at that time, at my school, most of the boys went to band, and most of the girls went to orchestra. So, of course, I wanted to be where the girls were at, so I signed up for violin more so to appease my mother.
But it was one extracurricular activity only?
Only one.
You got to pick one.
Well, I had to pick one.
You picked well.
And that was now 29 years ago.
How about that? Mm. And how did you get into piano?
another great, as a music major at Michigan State, we were required to have all music majors have to have class piano. So I actually began piano here at Michigan State.
Oh, pretty late.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, did you know as a young person, did you have an inclination as a young person that music was going to really be your life? At what point did it become apparent music had to be your life?
Yeah, I think in high school is when I realized it. I really enjoyed performing with other people and just the communication musically between other musicians. I really enjoyed playing in orchestra, and I think it was in high school I kind of realized that this was something I wanted to do.
What's the main part of your musical life right now? What are you doing though?
Now,
I know you're an educator
yes,
as well.
I probably most do just violin. A freelance violinist. I play at many different types of mostly, you know, churches, different schools, anything from weddings to funerals. So, but I do a lot more performing, I think, than I thought I would be doing as a music ed major when I was here at MSU.
And you performed on violin at Jazz on the Grand, or were you on piano?
I was actually on violin at Jazz on
okay,
the Grand.
Okay, very good. Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear another song here. What are you going to play for us?
All right, well, this is actually, I have my DJ equipment here, and this is actually kind of a hip-hop mix that I put together for the show.
All
today.
Right.
So hope you enjoy.
All right. Rodney Page on Current State.
Red Cafe.
Yeah.
Huh? And the beat goes on. 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 When you on the east side, ask about me. When you on the west side, ask about me. When you on the south side, ask about me. When you on the north side, ask about me. I'm the hottest thing in the hood. 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 I'm the
we have a freestyle rap for you today in my mix. I hope you enjoy this. Here we go. We're freestyling off the top. Here we go. Hey, yo. Yo. Make the lyrics up. Think real quickly. Off of the top, Marsh. I think they call me Prickly. See, I think fast. cats get it in. I'm known as the ball dude to play the violin. My freestyle is off the charts, smiling in the ear because I'm freestyling at WKAR. Why they know my freestyle, it makes so much sense. Try to come against me, I do it minus the pen. See, look, I take my time with it, wrap it up, put a bow on top because I got the gift to see. They trying to get on my team. I felt at home when I came to the studio. I'm seeing all green. Look at this. Don't they understand I go? Try to come against my freestyle for the show. So I'ma rise to the top. And I'ma show you how I do it big with my own beatbox.
That was extraordinary. Rodney Page performing all of that live here on Current State's Live Music Friday. That was something else. How did you learn how to do that?
Well, first, thank you so much, Mark. I'm so honored and thrilled to be here. I've had a lot of great musical influences throughout my life, and I call myself kind of a music chameleon. And I've had a lot of talented musicians that's guided me and helped me through all my past. So I've learned to do some of the hip hop things just kind of where I grew up in Southfield.
Did you like hip hop from the get go?
No, it was an acquired taste then. Yeah, I started to get into it more probably late high school, college. Yeah.
And you are considering a move into motivational speaking. Talk to us about that. What's prompting that move?
Well, I think some of it starts from me just being a former educator and working with kids and mentoring and conducting and working with kids in a variety of ways. And so even though I'm not teaching, I still feel that I can offer something to the kids, be an inspiration to children, and show that it's okay to do something different and that you're able to do your very best when you're in your element and you're thinking outside the box.
Where can people see you perform? Do you have a live performance coming up anywhere and on any instrument, or can people check you out online?
Probably check me out online right now. My website is www.full-engagement-experience.com. Where you can find out. I have some dates on there. Well, I will be coming in the near future, but also information about an upcoming album that I'm working on, a 5-song EP. So that would be, again, that's www.fullengagementexperience.com.
Very good. Rodney Page, it's been just fantastic to have you here today. I'm going to say goodbye to our listeners here just ahead of you playing us out. Coming up here 1 week from tonight, we will be broadcasting live from the Great Lakes Folk Festival in downtown East Lansing. We're taking a little bit of a break from the daily shows next week. Tune in for the best of Current State, and we hope to see you in downtown East Lansing, broadcasting live 6 to 7 1 week from tonight at the Great Lakes Folk Festival. Rodney Page, great to have you here today. Rodney plays us out here on Current State.